Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Did you call?
Even going back a couple of years, you guys have had chippy battles with the Celtics. Like, what is it about them that causes the games to go to this level, even in the regular season, but especially tonight?
I guess just two teams that really don't like each other.
They were just showing more people. Like, games one and two, it was, once I could get past the second guy, it was kind of open. So they probably had a point of emphasis of clogging the lane when he comes off pick and roll, show two or three guys. And, I mean, as they should. But, I mean, it won't happen again.
All right, and that was John Wall expressing with true honesty the tenor of this series. These teams plain don't like each other. And that was Isaiah Thomas also explaining how the Wizards' defense showed up this time to stop him and how his confidence, though, is maybe a little stirred but not shaken. And this would be Ben Standig. Standing next to me is Todd Dybas. This is the Locked On Wizards podcast. Whew. I think I finally caught my breath. I think I avoided getting hit with a technical. I think I'm one of the few people in the building that can say that after this wild, intense game, this series, these two teams. It has been 2 years now. Every game, you're waiting for something to happen. A lot of things happened today. We've got a lot to talk about, Todd. Let's just jump right into this. It is late here, so let's get right into this. Starting with the who, what, where, when, why of it all. Where the hell do we even begin with this? I'll let you lead it off. Where the hell do we start?
By the way,
did I hear you say they won? I don't even know if I
said.
I didn't say that. Yeah. More importantly, the Wizards won the game. They won so easily. This time they got a huge 22-0 run in the first quarter. Yep. The lead never dipped below 19 in the second half. They were up by as much as 30. 116-89, but because so much other things happened, the game itself almost felt like an afterthought because there was so much intensity on both sides.
Yeah, and the Celtics never led, which was bizarre. So I would say, where do we begin? A few things, which obviously shows that there's a lot of ground to cover. One, Isaiah Thomas really slowed down tonight. I thought that was stunning. I thought it was apparent from the start that John Wall was in kind of a different mindset about getting into Isaiah Thomas and not letting him get off again. I thought him and Beal did a great job, and I thought a lot of their work came before the catch for Isaiah Thomas. I thought that was crucial. Lots of high denials tonight whenever he tried to get the ball to the 22-0 run to open the first quarter. We all sat there thinking, all right, so progressively, how close is this going to get before the game is over? Because we keep seeing these leads, and then they can't hang on to the leads. And by the end, they lost game one and two, despite having double-digit leads in the first quarter. That run was just, I guess, it's redundant to say a 22-0 run is a massive run, but it was just so many things were working well there. It wasn't just that one person got hot. That was a community effort. And then we saw some really bizarre stuff with Kelly Oubre slamming into Kelly Olynyk and Oubre getting thrown out. And then we saw some not so bizarre stuff, actually, what I would consider standard fare, of Brandon Jennings doing Brandon Jennings things, getting into it with Terry Rozier. And eventually both those guys got thrown out. Scott Brooks got a technical. Brad Stevens received a technical. Jan Mahimi came back. Which, come to think of it, I'm not even sure if I got a sentence about that in my story, and probably should have. But Yamahimi was back on the floor, and he received a technical at one point as well. He and Jerebko, right? Double technicals when they were tied up under the hoop.
I mean, both head coaches got technicals. The two backup point guards both got ejected after each getting two. The two big men, the one who hasn't played in the whole series and the one who is active for the first time.
April 10th.
Right, and then...
And Drebko hadn't been on the floor before tonight.
And none of that even counts Kelly Oubre. Let's dive into there a little bit since you sort of hit on Thomas. It was a stunning play. I mean, we see fights. We see these guys go at each other. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's sort of that, I'm going to get you, and then other people get in the way. Olynyk came at Oubre. This was at a point when the Wizards were already up 21 points.
Correct.
So the Wizards were in control. Again, we know that there's no such thing as in control for this team, but they were in control, at least at that mm-hmm. point. Olynyk set a high screen on Oubre. I don't know if it was totally in the head. Maybe it was, or he led with his shoulder,
what kind
whatever.
Of chest neck area saw live in the quick replays we saw. So right. We haven't seen the TV version, sat down and watched slow-mo TV versions of precisely.
And so he got hit. Oubre goes to the ground. Olynyk immediately gets called for the foul. He starts talking to the official, pleading his case, whatever. And Oubre...
So that's where I'm going to stop you. Oubre popped up like we have seen him before when he was agitated about getting dumped. But then he would, like, do his, like, salute thing, or he would, like, do the first down signal and head back up the floor and do his cool guy jog up the floor. Instead of heading up, that's totally what I expected for him when he popped up. It's the, I'm not hurt, I'm getting up real fast, pop up, right? Instead, he just turned and ran at Olynyk and, like, had a weird chest bumpy thing with him that sent Olynyk flying and also kind of brushed the ref. Which may end up being one of the keys to what happens here in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know if it's a eyes of the beholder kind of situation, yeah. But I think it's definitely very possible Oubre gets a suspension. And the reality also is, not just even for that play, but in a game with 8 technicals and 52 fouls and chippiness all over the place, and guys, and this isn't just this one game, it's a lot of games, mm-hmm. I can almost see hypothetically Kiki Vandeweghe, the NBA guy who makes these decisions, maybe even setting an example with Oubre, basically say, hey, enough. You guys are taking this too far. Play basketball. Stop making it a hockey fight. We blame Steve Wino for the hockey aspect of this game. And we'll see about that. In terms of what Oubre did, lost his mind. I mean, I see people coming at me on Twitter when I sort of said he might get suspended, and I get the fans are saying, oh, what are you talking about? And I saw people saying Olynyk flipped. Or flopped. Mm-hmm. I saw enough of the replay to know I don't think that happened. He was looking at the ref. All of a sudden, here comes this guy coming right at him and hits him. The bottom line is they're all wearing, what, the DC...
Death Row DC shirts.
Yeah. And they had that thing going on, and they've been talking about having to get more physical and intense with these guys. And they did that. I mean, Boston said that. Brad Stevens said that repeatedly. The Wizards definitely picked up their intensity. There's a difference between that...
Absolutely.
And what he did. And what you would call youthful...
Dumb. No, it was dumb.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it was...
Especially considering the lead, especially considering the playoffs, especially considering part of your job in this series is to guard Isaiah Thomas, a guy who in game two, scored 53 points and scored 86 points in the first two games in the series. So that's stupid.
So it was definitely bad. And, like, if he gets suspended, I mean, look, the Mahimi's presence definitely helped... Both just in terms of just pure depth and numbers, but defensively help. Yep. And Oubre was, because the game was so lopsided, it didn't matter. But Otto Porter had a good game. We'll get into that in a second. Bojan Bogdanovic had three threes during that first quarter when the Wizards pulled away. And he had a lot. But both of them had 19 points, so they didn't miss Oubre. Game four could be a completely different story, especially, as you said, if Isaiah Thomas gets going and they want to switch Oubre out there. So that could be a huge moment for game four and game three. It didn't matter much, but that really set the tone. There had already been, I guess, the Mahimi and Jerebko technicals had happened just before that, but the Oubre thing was wild, and the reaction from everybody, it was all anybody was talking about at halftime and everywhere else, and it was a crazy thing. I'm sure maybe I'll get more into that over the next couple days here, so we have a couple days off between games three and four. Let's get to the who of it all, as in, who gets credit for Otto Porter's good day? I give you three candidates, Todd.
Okay.
Otto Porter himself, he had 19 points, but he had 15 in the first half. It was far more aggressive taking Isaiah Thomas to the basket when he was guarded by the little guy.
Yep.
So your choices are Otto Porter, Scott Brooks for making that adjustment to give him the ball inside against Thomas, or former Georgetown coach John Thompson III, who was in attendance and previously, as we know, when Roy Hibbert was playing against the Wizards, famously gave Roy Hibbert a talk that led to Roy Hibbert destroying the Wizards. I can say it's been a few days in the making. I know of this much from my own conversations, and apparently they had some conversation today. I don't know if it meant anything more than just, hey, how's it going? But regardless, those are your options, Otto Porter, Brooks, or JT3. Who gets the credit?
I'm taking D, none of the above. I'm going to give the credit to whoever taught Otto some basic fundamental mid-range post game when he was doing whatever it was he was doing as a youth in Missouri. Not a lot of guys have that game at this point in this league. We don't see that mid-range work. I always think of Paul Pierce when people tell me how inappropriate the mid-range game is. I mean, obviously Paul Pierce shot and made a lot of threes and progressively became better at that. He also destroyed people at the elbow. If you put a small guy on him, he just demolished those people. So I'm not saying that Otto is that level of scorer, certainly, but he has that. That's a place where he's comfortable, and a lot of guys are not comfortable there. So whoever taught him that, to be comfortable there, how to get into the middle and kind of jump over or shoot a little fadeaway there. And as we know, Otto loves to have an awkward angle and go off of 1 foot, and he turns those into swishes constantly. You know, that's kind of the effective quirkiness of his game, I guess I would call it. We saw that tonight, and it was even more effective when he has almost a foot height advantage over the defender.
I mean, and I think it's from anyway, your answer essentially is Otto Porter Sr. gets the credit, because I believe that is where where Junior learned his basketball chops from. But yeah, basically, look, this is another slow game for Bradley Beal. He was not that involved again. It didn't ultimately matter.
Hot start, and then...
Yeah, he scored the first 7 points, yeah. And then it kind of quieted from there. But Otto, as that first quarter progressed, Otto made his first 7 shots from the field.
Yes.
And just, you know, he was doing some of those other Otto things. But I think that really did sort of set the tone was set in multiple ways. Isaiah Thomas said that the Wizards set the tone. It was set with their physical play guarding him and just defensively and pushing in general. Yep. But also by that move, I think by getting Isaiah Thomas, and Thomas himself said it wasn't just Otto. He said Otto went at him twice, scored twice. Bogdanovich went inside on him and scored. He recognized they were doing that, but I think that was also
a way of Isaiah being like, shrug, you guys are trying to make this a thing, and some dudes scored 6 points.
Well, he can say whatever he wants, but I do think it. I mean, there were a lot of reasons why Isaiah Thomas struggled. He only had 13 points. If I didn't say it, he had, as a reminder, 53 the last game. But even more than the 13 points, he only took 8 attempts.
Right.
I mean, he was not.
That's what I was talking about at the opening.
Yeah.
Of keeping the ball away from him. Bradley Beal said after the game, he slowly said it, don't let him touch it.
Right.
Which is almost impossible to do, but any superior defense, that's your starting point when you have someone who's such a nightmare once they get the ball in their hands.
By the way, yesterday Scott Brooks, when asked what can they do against Isaiah Thomas, he's like, well, we've tried everything except for a triple team. And then Isaiah Thomas and I said, well, what were they doing? He goes, I think they were triple teaming me. So right. apparently that's what it took. To slow him down. But anyway, just in terms of the Otto part, I just think it was important that they did finally try to take advantage of that situation. And I've been saying, to give Brooks some credit or protection, I didn't necessarily think they needed to go doing things that were out of character. Mm-hmm. And look, they almost won game two without really going to attack it, but they did finally go to take advantage of it this game. And, you know, for the most part, it worked out. It got Otto off to a good start, really helped them early on. What else did I was going to ask about why did IT struggle, but we sort of already addressed that. So let's go with this. Why can't Boston find a starting lineup that works? I mean, Brad Stevens went back to Gerald Green today, who I believe had not started a game in like a decade before he got inserted in the starting lineup for Chicago. We keep talking about the Wizards bench is problematic. Well, Boston can't find a fifth starter. And this is the advantage that the Wizards have. Their starting lineup is better. Brad Stevens said pregame, the Wizards have basically destroyed them in 5 of the 8 quarters.
Yep.
But, you know, they obviously won the other three. Once again, the Wizards got off to a hot start. But it is weird to me. I mean, I don't quite get the Gerald Green thing. Basically, his point was he didn't want to screw up the second unit, which I guess is where he feels he's got an advantage. So he wanted to put Amir Johnson back on the bench. Yeah, he was a non-factor as well.
He's been a non-factor.
Yes.
He's always a non-factor against the Wizards. You remember against the Raptors when they basically left him in the playoffs, the Wizards were like, we don't care if you score 25 points. We're not running at you. We're not doing anything. We'll see what you can do. It's been strange. But, yeah, Gerald Green has been ineffective. It was ineffective the first time they tried it. They tried it in game one, and it didn't work. Then they tried Amir Johnson. That didn't work. They went back to Gerald Green. That didn't work. At this point, it almost behooves them, I would argue, to put Kelly Olynyk out there. We heard a lot from Isaiah Thomas tonight about the lack of quality screening he thought was going on with them. So, you know, you're not going to get a good screen out of Gerald Green. And Amir Johnson's totally ineffective. Maybe a better screener, certainly, but he hasn't provided anything else. So maybe you put Olynyk out there because you're starting against Markieff Morris and Gortat. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it's been odd to see them search. The number one seed in the East is having trouble finding a quality fifth starter in the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah, it's bizarre to say the least. And you know, the Wizards bench, because of Bogdanovich. And, you know, again, we mentioned Mahimi. There's more to say about it, but basically he did help. You could see already his defense.
Yes, 100%.
And by the way, just to sort of go to that point, apparently Brooks, I missed this, but I guess Brooks after the game said Mahimi has been asking to play in recent games, and they've been saying, no, wait. So just for all you out there who have been bagging on Mahimi, know that the head coach has at least is saying that the team was the ones who were being cautious and he was ready to go. You and I both saw him practice
yesterday
and looked, I think I used the word spry.
Yeah, he looked different than the prior times we've gotten a glimpse of him. He was moving around, jumping. He was not restricted to stationary action and basically working on his release.
And if you remember the last 20 games of the regular season or so,
yeah,
crazy as it was, the second unit was the stable part of the rotation. The starters were either great or terrible, and they were the ones blowing the leads as much as the bench was. So, and I think Mahimi's presence was a big reason why. At least he covered up the defensive miscue for some of these guys. All right, let's get to the when of it all. I'll give you two options. When will Bradley Beal find his three-point touch? Or when will Isaiah Thomas stop having dental issues?
I think
basically at halftime, Thomas had his tooth fell out. His temporary tooth fell out again at halftime.
Yep.
He didn't get it dealt with again. He said he's done with the dentist. He might go toothless if he has to. He's
right.
Not going back to the dentist. But anyway,
Dragonfly Jones. I'm gonna say that Beal finds his 3-point touch before Isaiah's teeth are situated, because Isaiah can't get something permanently jammed in there until he has surgery, and he needs the season to be over for that. So yeah, Beal has. I was looking at this before the game started today. I want to say off the top of my head, he was about 28% from three.
Yeah.
During the postseason, and again tonight, not great. So
1-for-4 tonight, 4-for-12 overall.
Yeah, it's crazy, and I think some of their looks pregame. Scott Brooks said he thought 13 of Beal's 15 looks in Game 2, when Beal was 4-for-15 overall, 13 of those 15 looks they thought were good looks. So, you know, we'll see. Obviously, that would make life a lot easier for other folks if he can start making threes and make his stand. I mean, even just his standard trail threes, those transition threes. He had one from the left side tonight across from the Wizards bench that could have been a killer one, and he bricked it. These aren't rattle outs either. These aren't the, you know, we saw him this morning at shoot around. He was the last guy off the floor putting in extra shooting. And it's always baffling with someone with such poetic mechanics when the ball doesn't go in when he releases it.
He also had a little bit of a tough time tonight because of game flow. He was in some foul trouble,
yep.
4 fouls, only played 26 minutes. Is this right? Markieff Morris played less than 19 minutes?
Yeah. Bogdanovich.
I guess. I mean, yeah, Bogdanovich played 30. I was looking at that going, whoa, what?
Yeah, I think obviously that would have increased if the game was so out of hand in the fourth.
Right.
Which, notably, they survived putting John Wall on the bench for the entire fourth quarter. He had played a lot up to that point. And then Jennings gets tossed.
Satoransky played the whole...
Satoransky got in there. Trey Burke finally got on the floor.
I'll tell you what on the Satoransky front, just to quickly say this. He once again, as he has all year, no matter how little he's played and whatever his inactivity is, when he comes into the game, he is ready to go.
Something's going to happen.
He's focused. Whatever I mentioned that to him after the game. He's like, "Oh, really? You think that's right?" I'm like, "Yeah." He also made the point because he right off the bat he came in through a nice feed ahead to Bogdanovich for a layup. Bogdanovich missed, but Sato kept running, dunked it in, and he then made the point of saying, see, I'm not just a practice dunker. He can do it for real. I wouldn't be surprised if Brooks has been – he keeps telling us he likes the Jennings Wall thing, okay? But I think now maybe this a little glimpse – Todd's shaking his head.
I'm just shaking my head at the Jennings Wall thing.
Yeah. At least tonight it wasn't a disaster, but almost everything worked for the Wizards tonight. But Satterance, I'm just saying maybe if he's looking for another guard, maybe I think Sato showed, even in a game this intense for the playoffs,
he's
whatever.
He's a bigger frame guard, you know, so the Celtics have several of those themselves. It's also interesting, are we wrapping up? Is that what we're doing?
We have one more to go.
We have one more to go. Okay, so real quick. So pregame, talking to Satoransky, there was some general conversation, and I delivered the sad news that no team in the major pro sports in town has been to the conference finals since 1998. And he was like, what? And he's like, oh, that's bad. And so we were talking about that, and I feel kind of bad about even having this as part of a discussion before a playoff game begins. But I said I wasn't going to mention it. And then one of the Wizards folks who works here and Sato already kind of knew, going down 3-0, no NBA team has ever come back in a best-of-seven series from trailing 3-0. So he was aware of that too, and kind of joked about it afterward.
And that sort of leads us to the last one, and that is, what can we expect from Game 4? What was I just had something really good to say, and then I just completely lost my train of thought. Son of a bee. Oh, you know what? Okay, I got it. You know, in the Atlanta series, it kind of felt... Well, I think two things jump out at me. One, Markieff Morris made a comment that he said, when asked about how physical this game was, he said he didn't think it was that physical. It wasn't as physical. He said, quote, Atlanta was a little more physical, like as far as our style. And now, I think some people wanted to take that as a diss on the Celtics. I actually think it's the opposite. I think he's basically saying, and it's pretty obvious, the Wizards offense is clicking. Boston can't stop them. The Atlanta, the pick and roll was dead. Other than some John Wall and Beal here and there, and Markieff in game one, they didn't have a lot going on.
And there was nothing on the roll for Gortat, and we've seen Gortat on the roll over and over and over.
I think when Otto made like his first four or five shots, that was already more bad, and that was like in the first quarter or 20 minutes. That was more baskets than he had in like five of the six games against Atlanta. So the Wizards' offense is there, and I think on some level, if you take the home court advantage of it, I think it's pretty clear the Wizards are the better team. I think if you can keep Isaiah Thomas in check, which I'm not saying is easy, but I think the Wizards are the better team. They have more outs. I mean, Beal hasn't even played that well. And I know they're losing in the series. Let me not go crazy here. They may not win the series. Boston has home court advantage. That's huge. I don't know if the Wizards can win a game there. We'll see. But I think the Wizards are showing to me, I think they're the better team. I think Boston being as aggressive as they are is an indication of they kind of know what they have to do. They have to sort of chop the Wizards down. And when Isaiah Thomas can't do Superman things, they don't have really a plan B necessarily. I mean, of course, Al Horford can score and this, that, and the other, but so much of their offense is predicated on this guy doing his things that when that fell apart, so did they. So I would say for game four, I'm not saying the Wizards are going to win. I need to see what's going on with the Kelly Oubre suspension, hypothetically. Beal's got to get that shot going. I assume Thomas will take more than 8 attempts the next game. But all that said, I just think, for me, the Wizards, I think they're the better team. I don't know if that means they'll win. I just think they're the better team.
I think game four is going to be much, much harder, certainly, than tonight was. It's such a titanic game. I mean, these two games, because of the 3-0 thing, this was essentially a game seven, because it's just there's too much math that says that's never going to happen. And then now the next game, we're in the next tier. Is Boston going to go home looking to close it out in just five games because they won here? I mean, I'm sure they would be thrilled by that concept. Or is it going to be square, best of three? Do the Wizards think what they did in Boston in the first two games still translates there? And finally, are they going to be able to hang on and then they can come home and not worry about home court advantage anymore and have an elimination game on their home floor where they've given everybody this season a really hard time? And specifically, Boston has not played well here throughout the regular season. So You know, I'm excited for Sunday. I'm furious. It's a 6:30 start on the East Coast on Sunday. Damn you, television people. Damn you all to hell. But, you know, it's going to be exciting to see what kind of changes Brad Stevens makes. It's going to be exciting to see what the Wizards can maintain come Sunday. And then it's going to be exciting going back to Boston next week.
Also, it will be exciting in the next day or two. I have interviews in the can with Phil Chenier. You heard of him. Who else? Mike Prada just wrote an article about sort of the Wizards returning as a fan favorite in town. Lane Whitaker with NBA.com. Oh, and the man, the myth, the legend, Brian Scalabrine, trying to explain to me why he is this unbelievably popular figure right now, plus some other stuff we'll get to. So that's coming up on the Locked On Wizards podcast. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you do your podcasting. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Wizards, at Ben Standiger, for Todd at Todd_Divers.
Hey, hey, I was listening the other day.
Oh, shit.
And you had Jaycon, and you spat out his Twitter handle, or he delivered it for you, and you noted how pleased you were that he did not have an underscore.
Yeah, other underscores are terrible. Always. I don't know what else to tell you.
I felt like you were subtweeting me on the podcast when I wasn't even around to defend myself.
No, in fairness to you, it wasn't just you. I hate all you people with that. I don't say there is another Todd Divas. Is that the problem?
I think.
Well, work that out.
I have no idea. I just made that up. I don't know.
Well, it's terrible. But, yeah, so hopefully you didn't take personal offense, but it's bad. Anyway, that's it for us. Thank you guys for listening. Whew. Hope you avoided any haymakers and you didn't get any fines from the NBA coming your way. Until next time, see ya.
Everybody just took me. Neal gets open for three. Dagger!
Bobby Tye, caught. Long drive, off balance shot. Dagger!